What's up, everybody? This is Keisha from Put Your Phone Down podcast. People, I'm not going to hold you. I have somebody who is going to knock your socks off for my hip hop heads, for my woke folks, for my unwoke folks. It doesn't matter. Who I have on this phone speaks to the people and for the people. And the universe just had to happen to align us, y'all. You know, he saw the podcast and listed somewhere. And out of everybody that contacts this man, because he is a busy, busy man, he connected with me. So, yeah. But I'm not going to hold you all. I'm going to say what this quote is first. And then I'm going to tell y'all who I got on this line. It says, it's all predator and prey. They prey on the predator. I prey on the innocent. That they've mistaken for the predators. That's called predator from Mr. Gnu Roxwell. Y'all, welcome Gnu to this show, to Put Your Phone Down podcast. And he did that about 8 years ago. It's titled Predator at All Deaf Poetry. Welcome, Mr. Gnu.
How are you? It was, I pray for the innocent.
Okay, see, I pray for the innocent. Look, yes, but that's a really dope. And that was just the beginning of that, you know, of that poem. Like I said, maybe about 8 years ago. And to know that that is still
relevant.
Prevalent. Yeah.
Yeah. That was, I don't remember how long ago that was, actually.
But, you know, it's so long. Well, it's long enough that you got to look back and be like, dang.
Right,
you know
right,
what I'm saying? Right. So, Mr. Gnu, I'm an Indiana girl, you know, and I believe that the people want to know who you are, what you represent, how many of these albums, and I'm calling them albums. I don't even know what to call them no more, but I mean, your work is excellent. Your artwork, the streams, the albums, the you speaking up for the people, counseling, caseworker, a man of many, many hats. But I always tell my guests, I either move to the passenger seat or the back seat. And, you know, at times they drop me off. Okay. But I'm scooting over and I'm going to let you tell the listeners who Gnu is. So go ahead and drive it to us.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm an artist at heart, you know, but I mean, aside from being an artist, I'm a community person, I would say, a community man, a father. I worked 15 years with foster youth. I used to work for, well, I kind of still do contract work for them, but organization called Children's Law Center. So they're like, they're the attorneys for like all the foster youth. And, you know, you go in to try to make sure the foster homes are cool and the kids' services are being met. But I will work with the foster youth who also have probation cases to mentor them and try to get them to not just comply with probation, but kind of like turn their life around. So helping them turn their life around so they could get off probation. But, you know, for a foster youth, the last thing they need to be on is probation, because they already got enough going on with the whole foster care system and all that. So, yeah, I've been doing that for a while on the side of course, like, as you know, I'm an MC. I've been rapping forever since I was a kid. But for me, the music is not about like chasing some kind of stardom. For me, the music is a means of me doing social work, but out to the people and not just the hands-on work that I might do at a 9-to-5, but actually taking what I learn, like perspective. I feel like, I mean, honestly, not being religious or whatever, but I feel like it's some perspective that I get that's, you know, it's been given to me, and I'm supposed to be a steward of that. So that's what I try to do in my music, but I try not to beat people over the head with it. So, I don't really come at him like the conscious rapper, like Mr. Mr. Positivity, but I'm more so like the hood newscaster that's just, you know, tapping in, giving you perspective, food for thought, some things to think about. It's kind of my approach to my music. So I'm like the social worker of hip hop, I guess you would say.
That's what I was about to say, because it's like you merge the two. And even if, you know, I know you mentioned you don't want to beat anybody's head over it, but let's say that you did, you know, let's say that what you do, you know, as far as being a caseworker and taking on those heavy cases and trying to convince the youth anything positive, and then you dive that into your music. Let's say you did kind of, you know, knock people's head into sense. What would be, you know, and you seeing what's going on in today's society, not just with the teens, but, you know, us as adults, when we turn on, we see them fighting and people just going at it. What would you say in that album? Like, what would be something that you would say to get people to really and truly listen if you were to knock them over the head?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, I'm always throwing jabs, like, or not jabs in a negative sense, but I'm always putting gems in the music and jewels in the music, something to like feed on. But even in my line of work, with working with the youth, nobody wants to be preached to. First of all, you got to build rapport with people. You want to help people, but nobody's going to receive help from somebody that they don't trust. You know what I mean? Like, you could be walking down the street in the middle of the night needing a ride, but if some strange dude roll up on you, are you going to get in the car with him? Nah, no. You don't trust him. You know what I mean? So Me as an artist, I can't help the community if I don't relate to the community, if I don't connect with them. And I can't think that I'm going to connect just because I'm black, they black, we connect. Nah, it don't work like that. Like, you got to build rapport. It's kind of like, that was Pac's strongest tool, I think he had, was that he made music that connected with the people. Like a song like Dear Mama, it's people that song was more than just a hip hop song on the radio. Like they connected with that, you know, it's people that can cry to that song thinking about their mamas. You know what I mean?
So, very true.
In that, I feel like, person that could put some food for thought in a song, and the people are gonna take it in. Like the dudes in the hood are gonna take it in, just like the dude that's on the corner trying to preach to people because he connected with you. You know, it's some artists, I'm not gonna throw no names out there or whatever, but if you get too preachy, nobody wanna be preached to and they just close their ears. And that's what I've experienced just working with the youth. And, you know, I know other social workers that don't quite connect with them, and then, you know, they'll open up with me and be like, man, you know, I like other social workers. You know, and so just the same tools that I use with connecting with the youth on a regular day-to-day basis is the same approach that I take to my music.
And you know what, we gotta take a moment to, you know, just tip our hat out to you for working with the youth and showing them something different. You know, at this time, I think a lot of our youth, they're just looking for somebody to be a little bit hard on them, not necessarily talking down to them, but they're looking for that type of, that structure. Exactly. So, you know, hats off for you for being present, because you just might be the only man they see, you know? So I got to hand that to you.
Man, well, thank you.
Go ahead. Now, what was you about to say?
No, what was you going to say?
I wanted to talk a smidgen about, you know, the music portion, but if you wanted to stay on the kids, we can do that as well.
I mean, it's your ship. Like,
You know, I'm supposed to be sitting in the back seat.
Nah, it ain't my car though. You got me driving your car.
Okay. So, all right. I'm gonna be the typical chick and be like, okay, I changed my mind. Give me my car back. Give me the key. Well, okay, let's dive into the music real quick, you know, because I it's so many layers to you. When I was doing my homework, I'm like, you know, even when we was on soundcheck, I'm like, whoa, you know, the things that I'm seeing, you more than music. And I didn't know exactly where to start off, because as I went on your website, and I want you to do all that to shout your website out. But when I went on there, I'm like, okay, you know, I go to this, to the art section, and I'm seeing Nina Simone, Colby, Marvin Gaye, Nipsey. And I'm like, yo, wait a minute. He did
that
this?
That was my first. That was my, my first love was drawing as a little kid. Like, that's the first thing I ever did was draw. And I, you know, I stepped off of it for a while. Once hip hop took over as a kid, I was just kind of like rap. But then, I got back to painting. And so, I kind of juggle a few different hats with that. I also do animation.
That work has taken you far from what I read. Like, I gotta have you name drop just a little, you know what I'm saying? Just a little now, be, you know, but if you want to name drop a lot, now I will tell you can do that. Nah. But this, your art didn't just stay with you, from what I understand. There's been a few celebrities your artwork has been around. Can you tell me more about that?
I mean, yeah, I'm not a name dropper. I mean, I've done a few things. Probably like the biggest thing I did, I had an opportunity. It was really random how I got the opportunity, but I had an opportunity to paint the backdrop for Chris Brown's, like, I think that was in like 2012, 2013. But his Billboard Awards, like, performance, I painted the backdrop for that performance. So that was pretty cool. Like, that was a big moment. You know, I get commissioned to paint stuff for people pretty frequently. So
we all see our, this is what I mean by the layers. Like, we started with Caseworker. No, we didn't. We started out with me quoting a small piece from you on stage doing the poetry. Then we got into you being the caseworker, you know, which is very important in this day and age. We got into that. We dived into now drawing being your first love, and I'm still not done. Like, I mean, this is what I mean by it's so many layers. Talking about this drawing, do you remember how old you were when you just was like, man, this is it. This is what I really like doing.
Oh, man, I have no clue. All my life, like, that was the thing that, you know, my family expected me to do was to be a visual artist. I can't remember when that first started. I know in high school, maybe end of junior high, I kind of backed off of it. I was doing it heavy, like competitions. I had artwork in the museum, and now I don't know. I just took a different direction, you know, like the hip hop thing kind of took over, and the whole just a kid rapping and whatnot, being a typical teenager, and I backed off of it for a long time. And then maybe 10 years ago I probably came back to it. So it's been cool to be able to dive back into it and pick up, actually improve now, because I'm more intentional about it now than, you know, as a kid you just do stuff.
Yeah, that work is dope. I just was like, whoa, wait a minute. Nina Simone, for real? Like, I'm looking, and y'all gonna have to check this out for real. Then, you know, because we are, let me see, we got to get to all of this. Let's talk about the music because I know you mentioned music pretty much took you, like even though it's like a love story, you start off, you got your first love, which is on, but you go out and you start dating, sound like you kind of, went out there and picked up the music where you can combine all of the things. You can combine your poetry and, like you said, you being, being a social worker, you can combine that and into your art because it is an art. So let's get into,
Well, yeah, that was quite the journey, actually. I would say, I think in terms of writing, the poetry kind of started off first, but really unintentional. That was like, I was a junior high school kid trying to write poems to girls I had crushes on. Like, it was like some kind of silly stuff. And really just came from like being in class. And I've always been a creative person. So when I never really paid attention in English class until we got to creative writing. And when I was shown that writing was art, it took on a whole different identity for me. Before then, when it was just spelling words and all that stuff, yeah, I was kind of checked out as a kid. I can't even lie. But then, the creative writing aspect of it pulled me into it, and I found a love for language. But then, like I said, I started rapping, and then just doing the hip hop thing. I'm of the golden era generation. You know what I mean? I went to high school in the 90s. So, when hip hop changed and went more towards the puffy cones, get jiggy and all of that stuff, I kind of like no longer had a space in mainstream hip hop, I guess you would say. Like I was shopping for a deal around that time, but my music was more like A Tribe Called Quest, and record labels were looking for puffy cones, so I didn't really fit anymore. And that pushed me to the poetry scene because I found that people would still listen at the poetry scene. They would listen to something of substance and not look for like the party hit, because I'm not a party song rapper. That's not what I do. It's more community commentary. But then in the poetry scene, I met a lady by the name of Elle Rivera. She's an older generation poet, but she was going to the juvenile halls and doing workshops in the juvenile halls, and she would always invite poets that she liked to come to the juvenile halls and speak with the youth. So she invited me. I, of course, went to speak with the youth, and it was so moving, honestly, just because I grew up in the heart of LA, from Compton to South Central Inglewood. So I got family that's gang banging, and unfortunately the drugs and all that stuff I'm really familiar with, and it really like hit my family hard in the 80s. So building with the kids in juvenile hall was really, it was like an opportunity to reach back and talk to my cousins when they was growing up. That's what it felt like. So I started going to that regularly, to where I was having aspirations to open a youth center, and it just really changed my trajectory and my focus. From, I didn't really have focus in music. It was just like, you just want to be a rapper, you're young, you're doing whatever. But it really gave me my focus in helping the community. And then from there, I met an attorney that worked at the Children's Law Center, like I was saying. And she was kind of moved by me wanting to start the youth center or youth program. And she was like, "Man, you should come work for us. We need case managers that can," well, at that time it was social work investigators, "that connect with the youth." And I didn't really take it serious at first because I never envisioned myself as a social worker. That's it wasn't, that was on the other side of things. That was like part of the system. And here I was, the poet on a soapbox, criticizing the system. But I eventually went out. I got the job. It was kind of hard to get it because I didn't have a degree in social work, and most of the people there did. But they took into account like the work that I was doing in a community with the youth, because I by that time I was doing after school programs and stuff like that. And then that was really eye opening, working in, like, actually working in, like, the foster care system and seeing what's behind the veil and the stuff that mainstream society doesn't see and we don't know about. And that began to change my lens a bit too. So it's been this constant evolution of seeing, you know, it's just everyday people. We kind of, we're critical of things that we don't even really know about. And then we get into those sectors and begin to see like, oh, dang, like this is going on, that's going on. Then I end up going back to school and studying psychology just because my eyes were being open with working in social work, which then the studying psychology was brought back to the music and trying to use what I was learning in school and learning on the job to put in the music to try to give it to my people. Because at the end of the day, that's what I always cared about the most, is helping my people heal, especially because of the spaces that I grew up in. So I know that was kind of long-winded, but
no,
that's kind of
no.
my journey with it.
That was what we all need to hear. You know, it's like, number one, the passion that you have in stumbling across this, because like you said, you was a cautious, you know, poet, pretty much talking down on, not down, but you giving a reality about society, the stuff that they don't want us to see. And just for you to turn around and see it for what it is. And now you have an opportunity to put that in your music. So it all tied together, you know, and gave you pretty much more passion for what you do, which is to go in there and at times speak for the people who don't have their voices. So that's super dope. That's super, super dope. So let's see, I'm at 22 minutes. Wish I could keep you longer. All right,
it's all good. I got a few minutes. I got a few more minutes. We can chop it up.
Okay. Oh, well, okay. So that means that we're going to have to extend it for a moment, you know. But we still got time, and I would love for this to be extended just for people to get the more layers, also where they can find you, you know. And I didn't want to get too deep before we do extend this, but I know you mentioned, you know, first off, you said the golden age, then you said you went to high school in the 90s. And I'm like, hold on, brother. I went to high school in the 90s too.
I graduated 94. So there's probably people listening to this that was born in 94.
I was 96. So when you said golden, I'm like, wait a minute. What he try? Am I the golden girl? No, I mean the golden. So I gotta. Man, look, I held this phone like, wait a minute. So he trying to say old or something like that. But anyway, no, you're right. Hip hop in the 90s, it was to me a variation. You know, if we didn't want LL Cool J, we had Ice-T. You know, if we wanted something, you know, with Biggie, we had him. Then we had Pac. It was variations. Kid and Play, N.W.A. Come on, you know.
Right,
and
right.
When it was beef, they had forums about it. You know, they would talk about it. They would talk it out. Now, like you said, towards the ending, when all this new type of rap came in, to me, it changed the direction.
Yeah.
Of us even having peace in the music, you know. I know back in the day we had this beef going on. I think it was like N.W.A. and I want to say Common, right? Not Common, a Chicago cat.
It was Common and Ice Cube. It wasn't even NWA.
Oh, okay.
Ice Cube took offense from Common's I Used to Love Her when he was talking
right.
about his, you know, his relationship with hip hop. And so it was a little beef. Yeah,
it was a beef, and Common just, you know, I'm a stand up for Common, even though I'm not from Chicago, you know, we neighbors. He right. didn't mean no harm, you know. For a minute, Common was going by Common Sense. He had the big hat.
Yeah,
he meant no harm. Is, you know, I don't. When you listen to, you know, I Used to Love Her, he plays so heavy with the words. But on top of that, it ain't sound like it was a jab. Even though you listen to it now, you know, we got our young kids listening to it or want to listen to it, check out Common, I Used to Love Her. When you go back.
Right.
Maybe it is a little shade, you know, but it was fun. And they set those brothers down pronto, you know, and we didn't. Yeah, we stopped seeing that with the Biggies and the Pox. You know, it was more like these cats started going on TV and airing each other out. And there was, before you know it, we had to choose. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was the first time. Yeah, me neither. But, you know,
right.
It's the pressure that I felt they put on people who do enjoy music, where
that
it was
media,
like,
though.
It was.
That was the media. That was them trying to sell magazines, honestly. Like, they're trying to sell magazines. So, you know, they stirring it up. They stirring up the beef like a kid in class that's trying to get two people to fight, you know, like instigating.
Well played, though, because it's like for the people that, you know, I think we saw it for what it was. Like, dang, Pac was on a magazine cover every week. Then you had Biggie on a Source magazine every week. It was like our first dose of social media, you know? And so when we see this beef going on, some people really felt, dang, I can't say I like Pac. I can't say I like Biggie. I couldn't, you know, they stopped believing that it could be both, you know? And then all of a sudden, that's when you add to me the assassination of hip hop. In a
What's
way.
Crazy to me is, like, I get that that's a narrative. I can only speak for, like, in LA, because that's where I was, like, but out here, I didn't feel that. And I mean, sure, okay, I'm, you know, there's likely somebody that was off that, but me being a hip hop dude in the streets from venue to venue, dealing with different circles of people, that wasn't the energy from hip hop circles in LA. Like, people that was like real hip hop heads wasn't like, oh, I gotta choose Biggie or oh, I gotta choose Pop. It was more like, ooh, did you hear that? Like, that was crazy. Like, he just, like, if you sitting in a room and two other kids, you know, that go to your same school is beefing, you sitting in the corner watching them argue and who y'all think gonna win. Like, you're not necessarily taking somebody's side. And I feel like that's really how hip hop heads was more like watching what's going on. And yeah, off some immature, like, oh, dang, talked about his wife. Oh, but, like, you know, off some dumb, like, hyped off the beef. But we wasn't like, yeah, like, screw the East Coast, because Pac is, like, beefing with Biggie. Like, that don't make sense.
Right.
Like,
and see, we go put a pin in that, because I'm going to tell you what we saw on the other side. Like, it almost, see, yeah, this is what I mean by we go have to extend this to oh, Lord, I'm stuttering. This episode, because we just get into it. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to tell you what it looked like, or what I think it looked like, over on this side, you know, because we was all pulled in. We knew nothing. I can say, well, not we, I'll say me. I knew nothing about East Coast, West Coast until these two cats appeared. So y'all stay tuned. I'm making history in 2024. The longest podcast on here. Look like we might go on a few more minutes with Mr. Good News. So, all right, y'all stay tuned. It's a part two coming in a short moment. All right, y'all, it's Keisha. You know who I am from Put Your Phone Down podcast. Y'all, listen, the conversation got so good that, Ganu, you just don't know. You created history. This 2024, now this is officially my longest podcast. Oh, no. So I thank you. Yeah, look at all the history you making. I thank you for, you know, giving me your time. As I told you earlier, I know your time is precious, but I think we just started getting... You know, not that the episode, you know, that we covering ain't dope, but I mean, I think we moving around. We giving this some steam here. So we was talking about East Coast, West Coast, you know, and how, you know, you guys was in the thick of it. So not really even feeling like you had to choose. Like you said, if they was dissing one another, which I thought that's where it should have stayed, it was cool. But on my end, I won't speak for Indiana. I'm just going to speak for Keisha. On my end, I did feel like, you know, damn, you know, look at where music is going. I hated to see that. I hated to see it. But at the same token, I was like, you know, engulfed in the beef. You know, I was like, man, what's about to happen next? And I was a Biggie fan, you know, might have been because I got some meat on my bones too. And I was like, come on, Biggie. You know, I ain't have a lot of fat idols. And then in the 90s, man, listen, the fat folks was coming out. Like, we ain't see the fat boys and Heavy D. But Missy was like, hey, y'all. I'm like, okay, she fat. Yeah,
Missy was the one right there.
That's what I'm saying. And then you had Biggie. When I had a choice, I was like, yeah, just for the big people. I'm just rooting for Biggie. But Biggie's work was sick. You know, like, and Pac's work was sick. And I hate that, you know, it was a divide when media got involved, you know. Mm-hmm. When media got involved, we started seeing them beefing at the Source Awards. Remember when?
Yeah, that's when it got crazy. When it began to be like brawls at the award shows and stuff like that. Then it was like, for me, I would say it was kind of embarrassing because, I mean, you know, just as a black man, I'm like, man, come on. Like, we can't do this on that stage. Like, what y'all looking like right now? Honestly, is where I was at with it. Like, come on, man. It's one thing, it's in the music, and that's what we listen to. But y'all doing it in a space where that's about to be on the news. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all of America is seeing us act a fool. Like, come on.
I really like that you said that because, you know, when you don't stay in LA, you don't know nobody in LA. Again, this is a Keisha thing. I'm not speaking for everybody. I just kind of thought that it was kind of like bragging rights. It did put some parts of LA and the West Coast, it to me, now, you know, I thought it put them on the map, you know, because of that connection. The Source Awards up here didn't come on to like 2 a.m. I used to stay up late, like the Source Awards, what's this? And I'm seeing Snoop Dogg get up and he like, dang, what's up? Y'all don't love us? You know,
oh, right.
Seeing Suge get up throwing shots, like, if you don't want nobody dancing, and I'm like, wait a minute. That is when it kind of started, because you look up and you see these, they were pretty much, you know, the voices that
was on
coming.
Some real hood, like, I mean, you know, they took banging the music industry. Like, they mm-hmm. took some neighborhood, like, I mean, you know, like how dudes act on the block, and they took that onto the stage. Whereas, you know, and it's not to say, like, gangster energy wasn't in hip hop before, because it was. But the thing is, it was just in the music. Like, it wasn't like on the stage at the award show.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when Suge Knight got up there and did that, it took that. He's the first music exec that came mm-hmm. off like, I'm a gangster. Like, what other music exec before Suge Knight came across like that?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, even Eazy-E eventually became a music exec, and Eazy was like a hood dude, but he still didn't, like, he didn't represent that energy in the industry. Like, I'm banging on everybody and I'm forcing people to do what I want them to do. There's people that was literally scared of Suge Knight.
Yeah, Suge came off real intimidating, and that's so much of a good point that I didn't think about that. You know, like, I kind of put him in the category of a rapper. You know, it's like, you know, that's how he came off. And like you said, here you are, you supposed to kind of be low key, you know, and you hopping on stage. He did shoot the first shot, pretty much, you know, aiming at Bad Boys and Puffy, talking about what he talked about. And so, you know,
I mean, he didn't shoot like the first shot, I would say, but like, because even, and that's the thing, right? Like, I feel like people could go tit for tat all day long. But I think, I mean, honestly, I'm not from the Midwest, but I would even, like, argue for the Midwest. I feel like everybody from every other place other than New York had a hard time getting on, because New York kind of functioned like, this is the Mecca, this is where it started at, and this is what it is. And like, outside of this, is it even really hip hop? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's a bunch of dope artists from Chicago, and Chicago wasn't getting no sun. Like, when Common came out, it was like, is he from New York? He's from Chicago. Like, that was surprising. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. So I think shots fired a long time ago. It was shots fired with Tim Dog dissing NWA. Like, New York kind of held this posture, kind of low key clowning on everybody. And so, you know, at that moment when Suge spoke, it was just one of them, like, man, we ain't gonna be in your shadows. Like, we, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like, nah, homie, like, we got this, was what that was. Like, you think you big dog on the yard? Like, nah, bro, like, watch out. I feel like that's what that was.
And I
had been, like, literally shot, like, you know what I mean? Like, before then.
Yeah. And you know what? I'll have to agree with you. So, you know, once you broke that down, I'm like, okay, I'll agree with you on that. You know, so since we on the music, and you mentioned, you know, that the music that you wanted to put out, you know, like you said, was about waking the people up. And then you look up within a blink of an eye, we got all this other rap that, you know, is phasing out the Black Sheeps and the Tribe Called Quest.
Public Enemy. Like, more Public Enemy, Poor Righteous Teachers, X-Clan. Mm-hmm. Like, that whole energy was, it didn't exist no more. Even Slick Rick with Children's Story. Yeah. Like, there was always, and I feel like my lane was more like a Slick Rick or like mm-hmm. a Special Ed, where it's like, they trying to give you like some food for thought, or like a wise fable. but in a cool, creative way that wasn't heavy. I feel like Public Enemy was more like a kind of hit you over the head with it, or X Clan was like a hit you over the head with it. I wasn't X Clan. I was more, you know, like what I just said. But it became a time after like Onyx hit and Wu-Tang hit and then Bad Boy hit, especially like once Jay-Z came into the light, everybody wanted to be a dope dealer.
Yeah.
Like everybody's a D-boy now. Everybody's selling packs now. Like, and then Biggie, like everybody want to murder everything now. Like you can't rap if you're not trying to like floss and have all the money, kill something to sell dope.
And that's no more. That's the point right there, because you know everything you said. When you think about the rappers, and you know we had a choice in listening. You did. There were messages in the music. You had be a father to your child, you know, over a dope beat, but it was a message. Tupac with Brenda Has a Baby, that had a message. Queen Latifah, ladies first, you know, right. MC Light, you know, when she talk about Georgie Porgy. The thing is,
exactly. Right.
You know, when you see, I told you, I can hang in the music department a tad bit, but all of that kind of started getting pushed out.
It was overshadowed. You know,
it was like overshadowed.
Snoop had us all talking about bees ain't nothing, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And it got mixed in with movies. So pretty much you losing you losing everything. When you got that dope ass soundtrack that go with Boys in the Hood, even though, you know, it had a message attached to it, but you see guns, and then you turn on that video, and like you said, you see that Fast Money, you see the Dookie chains, and anybody who is trying to come up like you and say, hey, look, I got a message, they was pretty much watering down, like, okay, look, you got kiddie rap going on. No, this is some real information.
Yeah.
So who's doing that now? I know that they out here, but is it somebody that's putting out, you know, besides yourself, you know, firework with information? I know, of course you, but is it somebody else that's putting that out that we might not be hearing a message because maybe the beat is dope, or maybe we just not connecting? Who else? I mean, outside?
I would say like the homie Eshawn Burgundy. I mean, like, I think he's like more considered like a Christian rapper, but it don't beat you over the head like what you would think of like Christian rap. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. He got that like Philly flow where it's just feel like dope hip hop, but it got gems in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, and I'm not like trying to toot my own horn or nothing like that, but I don't really feel like it's anybody that's in my lane per se. Like it's people that I feel like try to take that sometimes have a positive spin, like J. Cole. I think J. Cole and Kendrick is probably along the lines of the most like food for thought that's being dished out right now. But in terms of how like that's just my body of work, it's not, oh, I have a song that might talk about something. Like, if you go on my website right now and look at the EP that I just dropped, like, I got songs like The System that's really going into weaving through a deeper aspect of talking about the system. Like, I don't really feel like it's anybody that's coming at it the way that I'm coming at it, which is kind of why I'm still doing what I'm doing, is because I don't feel like the things that I have to say are being said.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I won't say that nobody's spitting. I mean, even Nas's last couple of projects, like I feel like he's spitting it. It's not like it's not the dark side, you know. I feel like it's moving more towards where hip hop used to be, or even like Black Thought. Black Thought is super spitter. Like, and it's not that, like, yeah, Black Thought ain't selling dope. You know what I mean? So it's people out there.
So let's keep our finger on the pulse and on your thing. You know, I curse on my podcast from time to time, but
okay, I didn't let's know keep off. Cool, so
yeah, I noticed you ain't slip up. That's what I'm saying. Kick your shoes off. It's your interview.
I never let, know with being like, I mean, you know, you go on some stuff and they like, this is the radio. You can't do that.
Oh, well, you know that this is not the radio yet. And even if it was, hell, if they doing stuff on social media, I know they cannot bleep shit. I mean, not out of all the stuff I done seen. So, but let's keep our finger on the pulse of you and your music and your message. You know, while I do have you here, you do have a large body of work when it comes to your music. And it's straight out the gate. Like, you know, the beat is great, but you come straight out the gate with so much fire coming out your throat. Right. Like, I mean, I'm hearing this, and that's what I want for you to kind of let people know that it's still music for your ears, your body, your mind, and your soul out here, you know? So,
yeah.
I'm officially getting to the backseat now, but I want to know about your what you got going on and what, you know, what people can expect from your music.
Well, I'm coining it adult contemporary hip hop just because I feel like we still hip hop heads. You know what I mean? Like, the music landscape has completely changed and hip hop is no longer for the youth. When we were growing up, yeah, hip hop was for the youth because that was our generation and that's what we was doing. But I feel like people our age still enjoy dope rhymes and like dope beats. Like, I mean, you know, we haven't completely slipped into I only listen to jazz now. So, but the problem with that is there's not being hip hop's not being made for us. It's only, well, I don't even know if you recall what's going on right now. Hip hop, like, that's debatable or whatever, but for me personally, as an adult and a man with six kids, I can't really get into the trap thing. I can't get into mm-hmm. drill music and trap and all that and have my kids in the car. And I ain't knocking the parents that, you know, do that. I was teaching high school and it would be parents pulling up to the school, bumping trap music with their kids in the car. You know, I was going through it in the classroom with them same kids, but like that ain't the influence that we want to have on our kids. And so I feel like I make music for like the thinkers in our community, like the people that still enjoy a dope beat, dope rhymes, but also like something to think about and chew on, that don't want to hear everybody dying in the music, don't want to hear everybody doped out in the music. You know, that's where I'm at with it. So, yeah.
So I am looking forward to people finding you. I mean, you everywhere. I don't know if you know that or not, but you are everywhere. You're a pretty big deal. You know, I'll say it for you. You know, you ain't got to say it. You a pretty big deal. If somebody looks and goes on YouTube and look this young man up, he has absolutely been making a positive imprint out of everything he could be doing, out of everything society wants to paint a Black man. He is doing the opposite, and he doesn't have to. He's out here, you know, pretty much being the voice for the people. If it's not, you know, doing your paperwork, handling cases, is you know, putting the word out, spreading the word out and putting life into it, you know? And again, you let these people know where to find you, because you know, this is our first conversation. And if I'm speaking this highly of you, and I only had a few days to look you up, and I was like, yo, wow.
Thank you.
This is the hidden treasure right here, you know. And so I want people to find you, you know, all over. And I know that you have many handles. So if you can, and if you don't mind, let us know about the website and your social media platforms.
Well, yeah, for sure. My website, I feel like, is the hub, you know. So it's gnew.com, gaknew.com. And that's basically, that's even with the music, like, now I'm just trying to house all my music on my website so people can just go there. That's a whole nother conversation with the streaming and stuff and all that. Is not, you know, and they doing us wrong with that. But then on social media too, Instagram, I'm probably use more than anything else, but that's also just at Gnew, which is GAKNEW. And yeah, that's really the go-to to really be able to connect with me.
Okay, so you guys, you want to go to Gnew.com and you check out everything. And honestly, you will not be disappointed. When you go and you check out the art, I need y'all to know, you know, it can be purchased as well. And you go get lost in the sauce looking and then listening to this dope music that he continues to put out, you know.
I appreciate that.
Look, it ain't no problem. I'm a truthful person. I don't know if this interview would have happened if I would have listened to, you know, it wouldn't have been good to me. I just would have been like, okay, never mind. But no, I'm looking and I'm like, okay, this has to happen. So I'm not going to hold you. It looks like we, you know, have definitely, we pushing on another 30. So it's 21 minutes in. And that would have completely been like, oh my gosh, I'd have made it big time. But you know, with this one, I want to wrap up and ask you, you know, if you had any closing remarks that you would like the listeners, you know, your followers, new listeners to if you had any word for them before I ask you my last and closing question.
If I had any word, I mean, I hope they have a blessed new year. I think, I mean, it's so many words I can't really just say. I can answer a question if you have a question. I can't really come up with like, all right, this is my final thought. Like, this is not.
Okay, so when you speak into the youth, you know, and I'm sure that you do, what is it that you tell them to kind of keep them afloat to know that it's other ways other than the guns and all of that?
Well, I think the main thing I try to do with the kids is, I mean, for one, they it's probation, right? So the judge is giving them a list of terms for them to comply with, and it's basically telling them, forcing them to change their life around and be somebody that they don't see themselves as. Really, it's like be a square where kids is like, that's not me. So you're asking these kids to be a stranger and they already out on an island, right? They already not with their families. Familiar person they got around now is them, and you asking them to not even be them. So, and I say, like, who in the world, if somebody came with a list of like ways that you should change your life around, they believe that you're a bad person and they have a list of things that will make you a good person, would you actually do those things? It's like, who the heck are you to tell me that, you know, who I am is a demon and should be thrown away unless I change to be who you want me to be? So already right there, it's a setup for failure, the way that the system is. So what I try to do is reshape it and find intrinsic motivation for the kids. So I first start off with talking to them about their goals and their aspirations and what they want to be. And then I try to work the angle of aligning the terms of their probation with what they want in life, rather than that the judge wants you to make these changes. So, for example, if I'm talking to a kid, he might be hanging out, banging with the homies, smoking weed, not going to school. But I'm talking to him, and he's like, he want to be a football player. He want to be a professional football player. Now, most social workers I encountered would tell him, well, you know, that's kind of far-fetched. That's a one in a million chance. You need to focus on what to do, is what a lot of adults, how they approach that situation. But for me, I'm like, okay, so you got game. Like, you ball, like, you did you play Pop Warner or whatever? And, you know, I might joke around with them on the football thing. And then I say, well, you know, you got to they recruit from college to go pro. Like, if you want to go pro, you got to play college ball to get pro. And then, you know, in order to get to college ball, we got to get you playing in high school. What you got to do is get you playing for the school. So if that's really what you want to do is play football, you know, like, I'm going to take the angle of using what they say they want or the dream that they have to then encourage them to do what they need to do. Now, it's no reason for me to burst this bubble and tell him it's a one in a million chance for you to go pro, whether it be basketball, football, baseball, whatever it may be. He don't really need to hear that from me. Like, like, true. What's the point? Like, really, what am I doing? Am I saying, well, because I don't want him to have this dream and then in the end, like, he doesn't make it, and then what, he's going to be sad? Like, in the meantime, he didn't went to graduated from high school, got a diploma. He tried to go to college. Like, he's done so many things that's good for his life. On a chase for this goal, does it really matter that he didn't, like, go pro? And what if he does go pro? Because I know Chad Ochocinco was going to SMC Community College before he went pro. You know what I mean? It's dudes all day long that have not been doing so well when they left high school, end up having to go to a community college, then leave the community college and go to a university and then end up in the pros. And their life could have went a whole different direction. So you can't say because this kid is you know, getting into whatever he's getting into that he can't go nowhere. Like, Allen Iverson was locked up when they wanted him to go to Georgia. Like, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's kind of. Oh, what was you gonna say?
No, I'm agreeing with you. I didn't even mean to cut you, but it goes a lot into, you know, Maya Angelou, and I might mess up this quote, but, you know, basically is exactly in line to what you said. You know, I may forget what you said, but I won't forget how that made me feel. And the fact of the matter is you've impacted both words and feelings into somebody that if they did make it pro, they'll in the back of their mind be like, man, I remember when Mr. Gnu said this to me, you know, and they won't forget it. So, and I applaud you for all of that, but, you know, we almost at our 30 minutes. This gonna be a complete hour. Man, it's been great. I'm gonna end this though with asking you. Sometimes it's tough for some people, but, you know, I think I got the right person on the line for this. You ready? You ready for this question? Okay. Mr. Gnu, who is your GOAT?
Man, I can't say, like, that I have a GOAT, but I think one of the MCs that I think is, like, one of the dopest MCs is, I would say, Black Thought from The Roots. Like, every time I hear him spit, I'm hanging on the words. Like, the flow is incredible. Or like Feral Monks, those are my type of MCs. That's yeah. where some people get too complicated.
Now, you know what? I know we ain't got long, but he don't get enough recognition. So you're right. You know, it wasn't too many rappers that was coming out with a band, you know, behind them. And then
Man, right.
when, you know, I got to give a shout out to one of my favorite videos. I think it's called What They Do. I just remember the video, and the video was so ahead of its time. You know
that
you know it was the you know in the video they was showing how everything was fake, so you know it was like you know of course it had that slow beat to it, you know, Quest is back there right. hitting the drums, and it showed, you know, as soon as the camera stopped rolling, they taking their rollies back, they taking off everything, and yeah. that was a video in the 90s, and it again, it's just like your work that came out a few years back, still relevant to what is going on. So Black Thought, such an awesome choice. You know, his name is not mentioned in enough rooms, and yours is right next, you know. Yours is right next. So we are over 30. And I want to thank you so much, honestly, for being a part of this podcast experience and journey. It has been so awesome. For my listeners, I want to thank you for sharing. I want to thank you for liking. I want to thank you for peeking in on me and telling me to keep going. You guys, I'm on all platforms, okay? So you can't ever miss me. And in the meantime, we got another good episode coming up. So keep your ears to the street. I have Mr. Ganu Roxwell on the phone with thank me. You. And you guys, you are so welcome. Thank you. You know, thank you. And y'all, check his workout. He told you where he is. So go ahead and check him out. To the meantime,
all right, peace.